Okay, so the way what we've just been looking at is a particular dynamic around the tarot and a dynamic around working with images. Just want to come back to the Tree of Life just briefly, just before we go to lunch, because we're going to work so that's one shape we can work with. This is the Tree of Life is another shape we can work with, which I'm going to look at with you this afternoon. But I just want to do a sort of overview of it, because this afternoon we're going to concentrate on, in particular, on the relationship between what I'm calling the triangle of self and the triangle of soul. And I'll be using the number cards and the tarot trumps as a way of elucidating that relationship. But in a certain sense, this is a, we could say this looks like a vertical kind of diagram. It's actually a diagram of depth. So in a sense, with the body, if you like, here we are sitting in our bodies, sitting in the world, we're sitting at the outermost edge of this diagram. And now this diagram is simultaneously an image of the human soul, but it's an image of the universe as seen by the Renaissance magi, because the body and earth is on the outer place. The next place you come to is the image of the moon. Then we have the two planets, Mercury and Venus, which are just in opposites here. Mercury on the left side of the diagram as you're facing it, and Venus on the right side. The middle we've got the Sun. Just above the Sun we have the two planets, Mars and Jupiter. And we have a lacuna, or a place of mystery, which I'm calling the door of mystery. In Hebrew it's called Da'at, which is the knowing of unknowing. And then that brings us into the almost the deepest place of our being, which we have the planet Saturn. We have the sphere of the fixed stars, and what the ancients called the primum mobile, the beginning, the first movement. So that's the external image that they shape this tree around. But if we apply it to the human soul, we obviously begin the soul with body. And then we have a triangle that's to do with mind, feelings, and what we might call the pool of personal life. You could call it the personal unconscious, but it's also pre-conscious as well. But in a certain sense, that this is where we spend much of our life, most of our life, perhaps. We're dealing with thoughts, feelings, images of memory that arise up from the sense of our collected pool of personal life. And there's a way in which this forms a dynamic. So the feelings, mind, memory, images feed off each other in a sort of, in a continuous circle. And unless that cycle is interrupted, it just keeps reinforcing itself. And it's that process you see in a human life where as people get older, that dialogue, either because we work on it and interrupt it, becomes weaker, or if it's never interrupted, it just gets stronger and stronger. So it affects us, and in a sense, that dialogue, and in particular, this sphere here, which is the pool of personal life, which in Hebrew is called Yesod, or the foundation, acquires enormous potency and power, and can almost expand, because it's the known life, the known set of images. It can expand and overshadow actual feelings and actual thoughts and body and sense of body. Well, I'm calling it the pool of personal life, which is a phrase I've just made up. But so it's just how it came to me just now. But that is our sense of me in my world. Now that sense of knownness, memory. This is how things work. This is how I work. Its function is to create stability, to create an unvarying shape, to keep me safe in my world.
So like identity.
Yeah, it's absolutely linked to identity, and it feels solid, but it's actually a dynamic that's being recreated all the time by thought and feeling, and that sense of memory and sense of self continually reinforcing itself. Now, when that sense of interruption happens, that either by inner exercises or by outer events, you get this sense of shock, almost an opening and possibility in that. But if it's not interrupted, it just keeps on growing, keeps on accumulating, because it is a dynamic, it's not a sort of static process. So that sense of, this is me in my life, this is where you get phrases like, well, that's the way I am, that's the way the world is, and where, you know, because every time you say that, or even subliminally think that, you're actually using your creative energy to solidify. So we can either solidify, because everything is a dynamic, there's no standing still, so you're either going to solidify and fixate, or you're going to open and grow. These are the choices, really. Choices to, you know, cooperate with the energies of movement and opening, or cooperate with the energies of contraction and solidification. Now, one of the things that you discover very often when you first start a play, if you're either in meditation or in therapy or even in doing things like sport, where you start to pay attention to the body, the first thing you realize is how little most of us are present in body. We're present often in a facsimile of body, in an image of body. Because actually one of the great things about the body is it operates, the senses operate in present time. When you come actually into your senses, into the sense it part of body, you start to notice. It starts to bring you out of the complexity of the inner dialogue. You notice a lamb in a field, you notice the sunlight, you notice maybe leaves starting to emerge. For just a little moment, and only for a moment, something stops, something opens a little bit. And then next minute you're gone. Now, some aspects of the internal dialogue, of course, are very adaptive, because you can't do everything consciously all the time. You have to learn to do things unconsciously, driving being the great example of that. You know, so if you remember what it's like learning to drive, we're having to do everything consciously. You've got no unconscious skill. It's a nightmare. You crunch the gears, you stall, you accelerate, then you brake. You know, so there's a way in which this part of the inner dialogue is absolutely functional. We need it. We need to have a, if you like, unconscious competence. But the other problem with it is that if it becomes too large and too, if it's not the servant, it becomes the master, it becomes the person that's in charge of things. Because if your identity is swallowed up by that place, now the real function, Kabbalists have a phrase for this, they call it the machinery of the universe, this place. And it's like the machine-like aspect of ourselves, which actually, when it's working well, is incredibly functional. But if that machine-like quality invades our emotional life, our thinking life, even our sense of body, we become machine-like, we become ossified, we become sort of repetitive and incapable of innovation. Incapable, and that eventually it means we become incapable of seeing new things, of experiencing new things. That, I remember my father, the great example for me of that, he'd say, well, every place is like another. What's the point of going anywhere? That was a ridiculous thing to say. No place is like another. Every place is different. But my father's belief, not just belief, but somatic reality was, so he could go places and he would see it the same as Clydach. If you've ever been to Clydach, you'll know there are not many places like Clydach, kind of, happily, in my experience. But my dad would say, well, everything's the same. You know, he could, I've never did go with him to very exotic places, thankfully, because he'd have been miserable. But he would literally have created a reality around him where any difference would be, it's just a place. Things are just places, places are just places, all places are the same. He needed to believe that, needed to embody that. He did embody that. And he was a very depressed and resentful man, so he kind of needed to empty out from life anything that offered difference or possibility of growth. He and his had a friend, when he's a school teacher, and I went to a school when I was a kid. There was him and an old caretaker would meet up every day, one of the little routines where they used to reinforce each other's negativity. Another day gone, Di? Aye, another day gone. Yeah. Another day. That boom, that was it. Right, so empty the day of meaning, empty the day of possibility. Reinforce each other, use your mutual creativity to say, look, nothing means anything.
So is that the pool getting stagnant?
Exactly. There's no life, new life flowing in. It becomes more and more kind of thick, more and more kind of no new life, no oxygen. If we use the image of the pool, there's no oxygen in the pool. Right, so things die in it. But it is this stagnant, toxic waters. The Kabbalists talk about Yesod as the place of sweet and bitter waters. The place of, the Kabbalists say that Yesod, this place of foundation, is the place of the sweet and bitter waters. And because it is also this place where, when life flows in it, it is this place of where beautiful images can arise. The imagination can embody itself down into the body. Or it can be this place where you take these stagnant images and you embody these stagnant images, which is in a sense what my father was doing. And to a certain extent, we all do this in our places of fear, our places of stuckness. We all embody some aspect of that. Now, this spinning wheel, really, it forms a kind of a barrier to anything deeper. So the Kabbalists use this phrase called the veil of the temple, where you cannot see into the deeper parts of the self, because you've got this spinning wheel which forms a kind of screen against which your life is lived and which gives meaning and direction to your life. What has to happen, and what the inner practices do, partly by bringing in the sense of body, we see start to connect present sense of body with this pool of, with your pool of life, with your feelings, with your mind. You start, which is where things like mindfulness come in, you start to get present in the moment. That starts to connect you to a more present sense. It starts to open up the dialogue into a sense of presence and into a sense of whatever is coming in through the senses. When the body is subsumed in the inner dialogue, even external impressions can't get through because they come through the filter of this kind of dialogue. In a sense that, if you like, this place of the pool of identity swallows up feeling, swallows up mind, swallows up even body. So everything is co-opted into the stable, dynamic dialogue. So that's why you start always with connecting the book, coming into the body. So whenever we begin these workshops, I say, pay attention to your body, pay attention to your senses, come into your senses, notice yourself inwardly, notice the world around you. Become because the body there starts to become, as we bring presence and awareness into the body, it starts to become the living bridge. What then starts to happen is the dialogue starts to slow down a bit, because actually the inner dialogue is extremely fast, and getting present even for a moment in the body brings in a sense of contact with actuality, real. Because the thing about the inner dialogue, it's all predicated on memory. It's all about me needing to protect myself because I have old experiences that are continuing to live inside me, because I'm trying to keep myself safe from whatever's hurt me in the past or what might hurt me in the future. So as we start to interrupt that, just by slowing down, by coming into actual body time and body presence, we then start to create gaps in this kind of dialogue, which start to give us insight into and conscious connection with the deeper parts of our own soul. And what starts to happen, because all this, the rest of the soul isn't gone, it's not destroyed, it's just inaccessible because we don't see it. But actually, it's there working underneath the surface. Also, there's another dynamic There's a whole series of dynamics, actually, from the deeper parts of the soul that are working underneath the surface to interrupt this dialogue so that a wider sense of self and identity can start to manifest. And as we build the connections from the outside, so we start to notice that there actually are connections coming in from the deeper places. In particular, from this place of presence, which is experienced normally as intuition. As this, it talks about in the Bible, the still small voice, or the sense of that sort of entirely irrational sense of needing to do something or say something or go somewhere. Right, this kind of, and the intuition's got a very particular quality because it feels like it comes from nowhere, and it feels like it comes from nowhere because it's outside the self system. It's coming from a deeper place. Now, as we kind of cooperate with this, as we successively start to open up the inner dialogue, we start to see other connections start to get made. So we start to connect. This is green for that. So we start to connect our body with mind, body with a sense of personal identity, the pool of personal life, body with feelings. That starts to change the dynamic. Starts to open up this seal system. Then the voice of intuition starts to descend downwards into the pool of personal life. Kabbalists sometimes talk about this as the angel descending into the pool. And so then from both ends, the whole system is starting to open up. What then starts to happen is you get connections between the sort of outer edges. Mind starts to relate into mind as Mercury, is this fast moving, trying to make meaning all the time. It starts to connect to a deeper archetype, the deeper archetype of the martial archetype, which is, has clarity, the ability to choose and judge. In a good way, I don't mean judge in a kind of in a horrible way, but choose to discriminate. Similarly, feelings here, the Venusian feelings start to open up into the sense of Jupiter, which is a sense of love and compassion. So we're starting now to relate, our sense of identity is expanding into a kind of a much kind of deeper kind of place where so the mind starts to become feel clearer instead of a continual spinning around. Feelings which are very reactive start to open up into a wider sense of acceptance and compassion. Now as we start to establish our connection with this part, we start to come into what I've called the triangle of soul. Now that starts to connect up into something deeper, because even the triangle of soul, which is quite a great place to hang out, which because you've got a sense of presence, sense of compassion, sense of kind of clarity, but you've still got very much a sense of I, here is me, and I. There's a sense of duality that's still quite strong there. And as that develops, you find an even deeper part of the human soul emerging, which I've called deep spirit, which is really about non-duality and mystery, and it passes through this region called the door of mystery, sometimes called the abyss as well, or the chasm, because it's the place between surrendering the sense of I-ness into something that's even deeper, that is non-dual, that is beyond opposites. Because there are opposites in the triangle of spirit, but these are opposites working in union together. So what we find in the triangle of spirit is a sense of what I call deep spirit, which is the core of our being, the deepest place, my very own self, which is not self, which is the part of us that swims in the deep waters. Connected to that is what is the great masculine archetype, the great feminine archetype, deep will and deep imagination that are imagined always in union together. There's no separation between this kind of triad. And as, in a sense, your sense of presence, your ability to receive with compassion, your ability to work with clarity opens, so too we become accessible to this much deeper layer, which has the same, it's a bit like the intuition coming into the self, but at a much deeper more disturbing way in some ways, because it disturbs even the sense of presence, because that sense of me being present starts to dissolve. That's why it's called the abyss. It's called a sort of a chasm where your sense of being, even an individual person, dissolves away, and you become aligned with a sort of universal will, universal imagination, universal being. And you know, so the clarity of the mind opens into the deep imagination. The ability to love opens into the deep will of the universe. And the sense of presence connects with something that is well, completely beyond presence. You could even call it absence, because it's so unlike how we normally experience ourselves. So that's just a quick romp through the tree of life and what happens when we do this work. Now, all of this is going on in you all the time, right? The place where you are beyond all opposites, where you are connected to the universal will, where you are connected to love, compassion, clarity, presence. That all is happening within the experience of thought and feeling and sense of my personal life and body. But we are fleetingly aware and unaware of these deeper possibilities in us. So the reason why we use things like the Tree of Life, we use things like the Tarot, is to continually disrupt this dialogue. Because we have to complete, in order to, the power of this dialogue is so immense, really, because it doesn't feel like a dialogue, it feels like real. The rest of this is nice ideas that feel like fantasy, in terms of the, you know, nice idea, but you know, is it real? And of course we only discover that it's real by discovering it's real, by entering in, by being affected and transformed by the processes. So what that means in practice, when we do a weekend like this or when we do work like this, is a lot of time we feel a bit disturbed or confused. You know, that mostly I teach confusion. I teach you to be disturbed. I invite us all to be disturbed together in that sense, right? So that we can discover there's more to us than we thought. More to us than we feel, more to us than we currently embody. But two of the three prominent strands of our being: the capacity to embody, the capacity to will, the capacity to imagine. And these operate in different levels in these different aspects of ourselves. Now, down at this level, the capacity to will and imagine and embody is really caught up in this pool of personal identity. So we, you know, it's that thing where I know what I like and I know what I don't like, and I what I'm willing here at this level is for things to stay the same and not to be disturbed, for all kinds of good reasons often, right? It's not the thing that's wrong, but that's but there is a problem with that in that it means we cannot grow. At a certain point we have to grow, or we have to refuse to grow, which has other kind of consequences. At this middle level, that sense of presence and clarity and compassion enables that system to open, so their ability to will is comes out of presence, comes out of connection, comes out of the ability to accept and love, and that gives a clarity to our willing. At the deepest level, the sense of personal will is replaced by alignment with the deep will of the universe and the deep imagination of the universe and the deep creative embodiment of the universe. So that's the place where you talk about enlightenment, you talk about the capacity to be the servant of the life of the universe. And we've all got that, but we don't know we've got that. That's even more inaccessible. It's hard enough to think we're present, we're clear, we're loving. this bit, which is why they say, so this down here, they say, well, this is like a veil. This is like, you can work with that. This is like a bloody great abyss or chasm. You've got to find a way to break a bridge across or jump across or do something with. Much more difficult.
So can I ask if the abyss, it goes through death?
Or yeah, it goes through death. It goes straight through there, yeah. Yeah. But that abyss is also, they say, a doorway. And they give it this, and they say this is a sphere, but it's not a sphere like anything else. That's why it's in dotted lines. They do this kind of playing with words all the time, the Kabbalists. So they call it Dart, which means knowledge, to know. Right? And actually, knowing is the biggest barrier to ever getting through. Not even there. Not even here. It's actually to not know. It's the opposite. To not know. In profoundly not know, so you let go, even knowing myself, knowing the world, knowing who I am or what I am, is the doorway into getting through into the deepest part of ourselves.
Could I just ask, the pool that we travelled to on our first journey,
yeah,
that great pool that's the kind of primordial,
yeah,
that's not
the lesson, no, that's Bina, that's the place of the deep imagination, right? So that is the image of that place, right? So that, because there's no shape there, no identity there, we're immersed in the deep waters of life,
right? So the yasod, that is the pool of personality,
yeah,
the thing about it being sweet unbittered waters, that's what you want it to be. That's, is that how you aim for it to be, or
no? You're aiming in a way to clarify, to detoxify that pool, to detoxify the bitterness of that pool, because that helps you to kind of it helps the pool. What you want that pool to do is to become still, so that it can. It's regarded as the moon, and presence is seen as the sun. So you want it to be able to reflect the images, the energy that's coming from the deeper places. So it is this. So in this is this place of sweet and bitter waters. There's all kinds of conflict and stuff. So the pool is all stirred up in a sense. So as we detoxify it and as we kind of hold it in a wider thing, it becomes still, so that it can do its job of reflecting the deeper images into the personal self, into the mind, into the feelings, and into the body. So that's when it becomes the servant, really, of this deeper place.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Good.
My sense that we were doing a lot of work with the body and coming up, and I had a sense that this pond or pool or place that we're emerging from was down that end.
Well, in a sense, this is all down in a way. The whole thing is down, you could say.
But at the same time, the Bible, they talk about the spirit moved upon the waters. So is it also not shining onto, I don't know, something, because it's, because I didn't realize we were up in Bina, sort of doing.
Well, no, well, what we're doing is using, what we're actually doing when we do these exercises, mm-hmm. is we're using the body to still the pool of yesod.
Right.
Which enables the deeper places to manifest. So we actually, but the image itself points at Bina.
Okay.
Right. So we're not at Bina. We're not at that deep place just yet.
Reflection.
But it's a reflection in that pool. Because the ability of this pool is it can reflect the deeper spheres. So when we're doing these exercises, we're using images that manifest here, that are reflections of these deeper places. Because what I do, it's finished now, but it's for the lunch. But what I do whenever I do these exercises, they're never scripted, so I always have to kind of sense into what is trying to emerge. So with the various exercises of visualizations, whatever that we do, I'm describing, so I'm tapping, using my own ability to tap into the feel of the group, I suppose, and sensing what's trying to emerge. and I have to allow that to emerge through me, which then, if you like, comes in through my personal pool of personal life, my body, my senses, my speech, which then impacts onto these places in you, and hopefully disrupts to some extent the internal dialogue, which enables you then to be touched by the deeper parts of your own soul which are trying to communicate to you. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Great. So we will